Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Journey to Grateful podcast, a podcast to help clarify the process of loss and grief through experiences shared from myself and others living with loss. I'm your host, Tim Begonia, and this is show number 152. Within this podcast, I will review the many common myths of grief to help you better prepare for the road ahead. You are invited to join this community and share your story to help others better understand grief, how it affects us moving forward, and how best to navigate its difficult path. I also invite you to join the community on Facebook and Instagram, subscribe to the podcast, and find quick links to do both at journeytograteful.com. And lastly, I ask that you take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Doing this will help this podcast reach more people just like you in need of an insightful grief resource which can help them navigate their grief journey. If you are over the age of, let's say, 25, there are things you understand about anxiety either through experience with someone who has suffered anxiety or through your own experiences. You may not have a complete grasp on anxiety or can't fully understand or control it, but it may be a part of life which you can manage or offer support to someone close to you. This is all said in reference to life in general, as anxiety affects our everyday lives. Now, consider anxiety as it relates to grief, and you will begin to understand the pinpoint effect it can have on someone based solely on a tragic life-altering event. Many people may not encounter substantial anxiety in their lives until they experience loss. I suspect, however, that most of us can at least grasp the idea of how loss can adversely affect someone, whether we've been closely touched by death or not. But I doubt many of us, while walking the path of grief, considered the effect anxiety has on our journey with grief, whether due to our inability to recognize it or our blind focus on trying just to survive it. In this podcast episode, I'd like to share with you an article about anxiety in grief. I believe this writing provides valuable insights while shedding light on thoughts, feelings, or experiences with grief that we might not have associated with anxiety, but are important for us to consider today. So let's dive into the article. I first discovered this article several months ago on whatsyourgrief.com website, and I've returned to it a few times over the past several weeks. Now, you may want to actually consider referring to the What's Your Grief website for valuable resources on your grief journey. It's a wonderful place to just meander through. So go ahead and take a look at that. Now, the article that I want to share with you was written by Eleanor Haley and provides powerful insights on how grief can be affected by anxiety. I plan to share the article in its entirety with a few personal observations or experiences added along the way. So here is Eleanor's writing on anxiety and grief. Think of something that scares you. Perhaps it's the thought of giving a speech in front of a crowd, taking a test, asking your crush out on a date, or jumping out of an airplane. Even if you're mostly fearless, everyone's got something. Now think about the thoughts and sensations you typically experience right before doing this thing that scares you. This is your fear and anxiety at work. Maybe your stomach starts doing cartwheels, your heart begins to race, or your breathing becomes rapid. Perhaps your thoughts start running through all the worst potential outcomes and you think to yourself, there's still time. I could still run from this situation. I know you know what I'm talking about. Even the bravest people feel fear and anxiety. They just know how to navigate the experience more exquisitely than most. Are you still with me? Okay, good. Now take a second and think backwards to a time when you experienced the thoughts and sensations of fear and anxiety in your grief. Maybe this isn't one particular traumatic moment, but a prolonged period of time when you experienced ongoing apprehension and worry upon worry upon worry. Using a personal example, I remember feeling panic-like anxiety when my father told me of my mother's terminal cancer diagnosis, and then the slow hum of persistent anxiety in the weeks and the months afterwards, as my family frantically searched for treatments and clinical trials. For 1 year, I held my breath and prepared for the worst, knowing that my mother's death was not a possibility, but a probability. People experience anxiety after the death of a loved one for a number of reasons, and we're going to discuss a few of them here today. Now, I'd like to pause there just for a moment and let you know the author of this article, Eleanor, sections out the main area of her writing into six specific reasons we experience anxiety and grief. These are the value of this article and certainly a resource that I'm sure will help many better understand our feelings, experiences, and thoughts with our grief up until now and going forward, and how integral anxiety has been in each of those areas. So I'll continue. Here are six reasons you may experience anxiety after the death of a loved one. Reason number one, you are trying to avoid unpleasant thoughts, memories, and emotions. I want to start by discussing avoidance because the act of avoidance is involved in perpetuating all of the scenarios to follow. When we talk about avoidance in grief, we are usually referring to experiential avoidance. Experiential avoidance is an attempt to block out, reduce, or change unpleasant thoughts, emotions, or bodily sensations. These are internal experiences that are perceived to be painful or threatening and might include fears of losing control, being embarrassed, or physical harm and thoughts and feelings, including shame, guilt, hopelessness, meaninglessness, separation, isolation, and many more. Now, please note, I say perceived to be painful or threatening. These judgments aren't often subjective, and what is perceived is threatening to one may seem totally irrational to another. Although grief is always unpleasant and uncomfortable, for some there are aspects of actually seem threatening, and these perceptions can lead to attempts to control or avoid frightening feelings and reactions. Although avoidance can be useful in certain scenarios, for many, it can become a harmful cycle that persists to the detriment of personal healing. Many mistakenly think that if they make efforts to avoid their feelings for long enough periods of time, these unpleasant emotions will be kept at bay or even fade away, when in actuality, deliberate attempts to suppress certain thoughts often make them more likely to surface. Avoidance is a large factor in the development and maintenance of anxiety. So here I would personally like to interject a bit in addition to what Eleanor writes. Ultimately, I believe through personal experiences and watching others that avoiding the unpleasantness of your loss more specifically and the overall grief you now live every day doesn't seem to work the way that we expect or hope it does. What I've experienced myself is that although facing your loss head on, discussing it with others, and living in your grief instead of pushing it away and out of your life, these are difficult things to do. But the alternative does not allow you to forget your loss, nor live more easily with that loss, because ultimately it will build up to a level that will literally become explosive and thus far more hurtful. Now, here's my takeaway. Living your sorrow and pain little by little is more effective than pushing it away until you have no choice but to face it all at once in that explosive situation. So let's continue with Eleanor's writing. Reason number two, why you may experience anxiety after death, it's a learned response. There may be elements of your loved one's death that, in the moment, you perceived as traumatic and terrifying. One of the quickest routes to acquiring fear and anxiety towards an object or situation is through a direct negative experience. When something traumatic happens, the thoughts, emotions, and sensations experienced in that moment can become paired with objects and situations associated with the event. Here's an example. A parent's phone rings at 5 a.m., and the person on the other end tells them that their son unexpectedly died in a car accident the night before. Now, she writes that she's sorry if this example hits too close to home, and I concur. She goes on to write, before this moment, a phone ringing in the morning might not have given the patient a second thought. But now, every time the phone rings before 8 a.m., the parent feels a temporary surge of panic. Many people can pinpoint at least one thing that, since their loss, which makes them feel anxious in ways it never did before. Now, here I'd also like to interject a bit more. I want to share a personal experience that I had early in my grief. Although not exactly parallel with the example Eleanor conveys, I feel it was the shape of which my anxiety took form for me. Suddenly, in the most random of times, while driving, seatbelt on, not necessarily on a long trip, it could just simply be for about 5-10 minutes within my community, I would feel a pang of claustrophobia, such that I would have to unbuckle my seatbelt, and one which created a very dry mouth, which made me feel as though I was unable to swallow. Another time that this occurred was when I sat in a dentist chair for my first teeth cleaning after my loss. It became so overwhelming that I had to apologize and reschedule the appointment. I was literally in the chair, they were leaning me back, and I just became overcome by claustrophobia, and I just apologized, and I had to get out. These feelings, although very real, were completely irrational and came on without notice in many different situations. There wasn't anything that literally triggered it other than maybe those little situations, but I don't think driving in a car is a unique situation. So I've considered that this was a bit of a manifestation of the lack of control that I felt throughout our fight with my wife's cancer, which had turned into these powerful claustrophobic episodes. Crazy, right? Okay, now back to Eleanor's article. Reason number three, why you may experience anxiety, you fear grief emotion. The relationship you have with your emotions is complicated and nuanced. People begin learning about emotion from a very early age through learning and observation. Beliefs about emotion can be impacted by many factors, but some common influences include the following. Adult role models, what they told us and how they handled emotions themselves. Cultural and social messages and norms. Religion, television, books, and movies, and personal experience. The death of a loved one can evoke such new and distressing emotions that they test or change your existing relationship with emotion. After a death, mourners often feel mentally out of control. If a person interprets their symptoms as dangerous, threatening, or indicative of a larger mental or physical problem, they are more likely to fear their reactions. Those who fear grief responses and grief-related emotions. So, for example, fear of emotion and anxiety themselves. Those will likely experience increased feelings of anxiety in a world where emotion is unpredictable and easily triggered. Those who are fearful of their reactions may also engage in persistent avoidance of triggers or reminders of the death or of their loved one, which can prevent the mourner from learning to cope with their thoughts, emotions, and memories, and thus contribute to the development of ongoing anxiety. Ultimately, they do not proceed forward with their grief. They are incapable of moving forward with their life. Reason number four, you aren't confident in your ability to cope. A person may also experience anxiety if they have little confidence in their ability to cope with their emotions, either because they feel their coping skills aren't sufficient enough or because they feel that they can't control their emotions. Although only some people will experience anxiety that would be considered clinically anxious, it's normal to feel anxious about experiencing new emotions, grief triggers, and painful memories. I would like to add here a personal side note. This section brings up a very important aspect of the grief journey we are all on. There is no wrong way to do grief. More importantly, there is no proper timeline in which your grief should have accomplished this or that. Each person's grief is their own and should not be compared to someone else's, but only for guidance as to what they may experience during their journey with grief. So now back to Eleanor's writing. Reason number five, you now know bad things can happen. Prior to your loved one's death, you may have assumed that the world was a good and benevolent place, where things happened for a reason. You may have also subconsciously believed that bad things wouldn't happen to you. When something bad did happen, your assumptions about the world became shattered. Depending on your understanding of what happened to you and your loved one, you may now hold new beliefs or engage in models of thinking that contribute to feelings of anxiety, such as probability, overestimation, cost overestimation, and intolerance of uncertainty. Probability of overestimation. You may overestimate the likelihood of bad things happening. Perhaps you overestimate the likelihood of the event that led to your loved one's death occurring, like cancer, accidents, or violence. Or perhaps your loved one's death led to the belief that bad things can happen to anyone at any time, and now you feel that disaster is likely to strike at any moment. Cost overestimation. Cost overestimation occurs when someone believes that the consequences of something happening will be worse than they truly are. For example, you may worry that if you encounter a grief trigger in public, you will become emotional and lose control in front of everyone, and that this will be a mortifying experience. Because you believe that the pain of experiencing this event is so excruciating, you may feel anxiety over the possibility of it happening and engage in avoidance to prevent it. However, by never allowing yourself to experience the event, you are never able to learn that, number one, the cost isn't as high as you assumed it to be, and number two, you are capable of coping with the experience. Intolerance of uncertainty. Some people have a very hard time dealing with even the remote possibility of something bad happening. Even if the odds of an event occurring are very low, the uncertainty of whether or not it will happen is enough to cause intense anxiety and distress. Many of you have learned firsthand that worst case, low probability scenarios can happen. So it may be futile for anyone to tell you to take comfort in the likelihood that these things won't happen. As someone who has experienced the unlikely, the task for you becomes learning to live with an unpredictable world that you just can't control. And finally, reason number 6. You may experience anxiety because you don't want to find yourself caught off guard. There are an interesting several theories out there. And here's a theory put forth by Michelle Newman and Sandra Leary back in 2011 to explain worry and avoidance in generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, called the contrast avoidance model. Now, Newman and Leary theorize that people with GAD use worry as a coping strategy because they prefer to feel chronically distressed in order to prepare for the worst outcome, rather than to experience a shift from a positive state to a negative emotion. Newman and Leary point out that worry preceding a negative event provides protection from experiencing a drastic increase in negative emotions when the event happens. This makes sense if you think about it, because our anxiety and society promotes worry all the time. We say things like, brace yourself, and don't let your guard down, which translates to, don't let something bad happen when you least expect it. Now back to words coming straight from me. Speaking specifically for myself, once again, this last point that Eleanor makes is paramount in what I believe blocks our overall ability to take steps to simply move forward. Ultimately, what she says can and will stop you from simply living. Worrying about being caught off guard means you will always live a guarded life. And in my opinion, that translates into not living well at all. I've said it before here on this podcast, and at the risk of repeating myself, I will say it again. Your loved one would not want you to stop living, stop loving life, stop moving forward with life, or stop appreciating your appreciation of life in general. As I know Colleen would want me to, because again, I was very fortunate to hear it directly from her. She wants me, and for that matter, our kids, to live life, and thus to celebrate her, to honor her, if for nothing else, to honor her strength to fight, to live while she was battling cancer. This is exactly what we want everyone to do. But let me be clear. This is never at the expense of forgetting her or what she meant to us, or much more importantly, what she still means to us. Living your life does not mean forgetting your loved one. For me to live is not for me to forget. It is on the contrary. For me to live as Colleen wants me to, that is celebrating her wishes, and that is thus celebrating her life and our life together. Anxiety in grief is yet one more side effect of grief. But with the proper resources, a strong support system, and a bit of work on your part to engage with people who have been placed in your life that are there to lift you, support you, and simply be with you when needed. Remember to allow them to help whenever you are in need, and always live your life and live as your loved one would have wanted you to live. Thank you again for listening to the Journey to Grateful podcast. I'm always thankful for you taking the time to listen to this podcast and sharing it with others. The sharing it with others aspect is extremely important. And I encourage you to stop by the community on social media because I want you to share your own story and your insights on grief and join our family in helping others on their path with grief. Head over to journeytograteful.com/community to find ways to join in the conversation and make a difference through your story. And if you would like a more personal connection directly with me, I invite you to connect with me via email, tim@journeytograteful.com. Lastly, help me build this community, broaden my reach, and support my mission by reviewing this show and telling others why you listen on Apple Podcasts. I provided you a review button over at journeytograteful.com on the homepage and the podcast page. Go ahead and support this podcast through your comments because it is a very powerful thing that you can do today, and I thank you so much for considering it. As this episode is filled with quite a lot of information, I will close out briefly here with a writing from Liz Newman that appears to be somewhat of a rally cry I believe we all could use as a reminder to ourselves that we will get through this. I'll let it speak for itself. But as long as there's grief, I will endure it, because it means that you were here and that it mattered. As long as grief is here, I will endure it. As long as grief is here, we will endure it. Now, I can't help myself but repeat and slightly adjust Liz's first line. Because it means that you were here and that you mattered. Thank you again, my friends, for joining me today. Let me know your thoughts on today's episode or any previous episodes. And for those of you who are walking on their path with grief, I hope you find a way to walk confidently on your journey to grateful. Bye-bye.